Welcome to the Real Estate Strategies Podcast, where we host in-depth conversations on everything real estate with the industry's biggest movers and shakers. I'm your host, Ken McElroy, joined by my co-host, Daniil. Let's get right into this episode.
Today on our show, we're going to be talking about the housing bust. How bad is it going to be? A lot of different opinions here. You know, I think it's going to be an interesting topic. First, I wanted to get to our Twitter feed. So you've been posting on Twitter a little bit, and we want to, you know, read some of the responses. As you know, we're going into a recession. So we asked everyone name a recession-proof job or profession. So we wanted to pool some of the best answers here. So
I like this one. This Bryce Garcia, sales, definitely have sales slumps. Here's the thing, like, he's right. You know, you might be in a job that's in, you know, in kind of some kind of a recession, but the point is if you have sales skills, you can, anyone will hire you, right? If you could sell stuff, sell people, sell, doesn't matter what it is. He's right about that. If you guys haven't seen Blair Singer's book, you know, Blair Singer is one of the Rich Dad Advisors, talks a lot about sales, has a lot of sales books. I would highly recommend you go take a look at that.
Yeah, so we love that answer. And then Jerry Pulp, the other one.
Undertaker.
Undertaker. That was pretty funny from James. And then I really like this next one. It's from John, and it said, plumber / electrician, they are depression proof. So love the trades, right? People need things fixed irregardless.
Well, and I'll tell you a couple things before we jump off the trades. You know, I grew up in the trades. So my dad was a sheet metal worker, and he was in a union, and I have lots of friends in the trades. You know, obviously we build apartments and we need trades for those. The old guys are dying off. I mean that, like this is from personal experience, you know, that, you know, there's not a lot of young people entering the trades. And so this is a very unique time. If people want to enter into these trades, you know, they can make a lot of money.
Oh my gosh, so much money. Yeah. It's insane the amount of money they make. I just had an electrician come to the house and he charges $120 an hour. And I think that's cheap. And that's just his own little business.
Yeah. And I'm telling you guys, like, this is something you need to keep your eye on. There's not a lot of young people entering the trades. So the people that are in the trades are killing it right now, which is awesome. But, you know, I was talking to a woman this weekend that has, you know, she actually buys campuses for universities. And I said, so, you know, what's your prediction on public education? And she said, 1/3 of these universities and mostly the small ones are going to be out of business very soon because the 4-year degree is not like as coveted as it once was. And people are chasing these 6-month and 1-year certificate and then going right into the workforce. It was a very interesting conversation, whether she's right or not right. It was a very interesting conversation. She said there's a lot of people building businesses around these 1-year certificate programs. And I think that might be the new normal. You know, we're talking about IT moves so fast, you know, these things move so fast that, you know, things and the laws and policies change so fast. You know, you need to have more nimble around some of these programs.
Yeah, we kind of talk about it, you know, college has become a little bit of a joke compared to what it used to be, right? Now it's very politicized and it's very, you know, the grades aren't as hard to get anymore. They kind of take anybody that'll pay them, just a lot of the colleges. So it's really diminished, you know. If you have somebody that applies for your job that's been in a 4-year degree or that's, you know, been working and starting their own business or interning, you know, it's not really much different, you know.
And I mean, we have really good friends, you know, TK Michelle as an example. You know, they've done very well by buying these trade companies, you know, plumbing, drywall. You know, he sold his contracting company, and did he buy another plumbing company and an HVAC company? And I'm telling you, the margins are great, the business is great. There's plenty of it. They're doing very, 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 very well with those businesses, and he's taking that money and buying real estate. So, you know, the purpose of a business is to buy real estate. So. Anyway, I think he's right on about that. Those are recessionary.
Yeah, and John from YouTube said he's a realtor and he started a handyman business. And it's been a great compliment because he gets leads for both businesses. So they kind of coexist with each other.
Yeah, the guy that does our stuff, we have a guy show up every week. He's a truck driver. And he drives an 18-wheeler, and he does this on the side. And we pay him pretty well per hour. We have him 8 hours a week.
Yeah.
And just come to the house and do all kinds of stuff that we need for our rentals and things like that. We pay him very well. I'm telling you, it's going to be a thing.
So make sure you hit the like button if you are watching and checking this out and enjoying it. Secondly, is if you go, Steve, is it up yet? All good? Okay. If you go to Ken McElroy official Instagram page, we are going to be doing a contest all month on Ken's football picks. So Ken is going to pick the winner of each game for the playoffs every weekend. If you beat him on his picks, then you're going to be entered in to win a Be Infinite sweatshirt.
But you won't beat me. Let's put it that way. First of all, Seattle's in the playoffs. Now, I'm from Seattle, so I cannot even believe that myself. I'm very happy. By the way, did you see those two kickoff returns from the Bills?
Yeah.
In one game. That was impressive, especially after what happened to the player.
So anyways, just go on to Ken McElroy Official. It's right up there in the heading where you can click on it, put in your votes, and we'll see who ends up doing better,
Ken. I'm telling you guys right now, I'm coming after you.
And we're going to be doing it every single weekend, and there's going to be a different prize every weekend and then a grand prize at the end.
You beat me, I'll make it worth your while.
I mean, Ken, you don't follow football that closely. So
I'm going to, though.
You guys have a pretty good,
I'm still competitive.
You guys have a pretty good chance of beating him, so... And girls. So today we're going to be talking about the housing bust and how bad it's going to be. There's a lot of different information everywhere.
It's crazy. I know. It's funny. Like, it depends on, it's like, honestly, I'm going to take a shot at the media. It's like the news. Like, you flip from Fox to ABC to NBC, you see very different messages. It's the same thing on what's coming out, on the housing, right? It's very, very interesting to me, but I'll tell you, there's no way anybody can predict, the number right now is 20%, I think.
Well, I was reading CNN this morning, and they were saying 1% to 4% correction.
Yeah.
And then Business Insider was saying 20%. So it's just really all over the place. So I want to talk about today, the factors.
Well, we've already seen 1% to 4%, so, it's easy to write that. I mean... all you got to do is look at the peak and and the number now. The other thing is I think a lot of people focus on residential, which is okay, but that's only one small piece. I can tell you that multifamily is somewhere between 10 and 20%. That's something that I'm very experienced on. And, as I told you guys, we wrote 50 offers last year. We probably underwrote hundreds of deals. And the pricing is definitely 10 to 20% off just in the multifamily space. We're seeing in office. We're seeing in retail. Not as much in warehouse. Warehouse is pretty hot still. But if we're just talking about residential, then I think you got to be careful, too, because if you look at Cleveland, it's going to be different than... Miami, and Miami's going to be different than Raleigh, and Raleigh's going to be different than Phoenix, and Phoenix is going to be different than San Francisco. So, so you got to be careful when you throw this blanket 20% over the whole market and look at the individual market, because Seattle, Portland, and San Francisco are getting clobbered.
Yeah. Yeah. I was also reading Seattle is basically, they were saying it's on a buying freeze. So,
it should be, you can't defund and then people are moving. So you have people moving out. Then the interest rates went up. You just take a look at the net migration and where they're going. And my acquisition guy just sent me last week. I should post this, Jerry. I'll give it to you. It was U-Haul. U-Haul for the 2022. It was very cool. U-Haul one ways. And so just an easy data point. Doesn't tell the whole story, of course, but U-Haul one ways tell a lot of stories. If you're going to go from Seattle to Phoenix, one way. So it's very, very interesting. It talks about the top states, where they're all moving from, where they're all moving to. And all that does is it puts pressure on that state, that city, whatever, wherever they are. That's all it is. More people with the existing housing stock creates more demand.
Right. Absolutely. But I want to go over the factors people need to be looking at, because none of us really know how bad we are going to see corrections, right? How much correction we're going to see. But we can break down what would cause those corrections to be more or less, you know, and so that's what I thought it'd be good to go over. But Mo, our favorite mortgage guy, wanted me to tell you that he thinks rates are going to start back going back down this summer because of the recession. So Ken does not think that. So we will see if Mo or Ken is correct.
I'll be in a wrestling match with Mo about July. First of all, I met yesterday with, you know, a brilliant guy that studied, you know, he used to be with the Federal Reserve, studies all this stuff, and he believes that the federal funds rate is going to go up to 5.25 to 5.5. And what are we at right now, Jerry? 4.75? 4.25, 4.75. I can't remember off the top of my head. So one of the good things that happened in the December Federal Reserve meeting was that they only raised the rates 0.5 point. Like, I don't know if that's good, but it's better than, you know, the 3 or 4 consecutive times of 0.75 points. So what that says is there, you know, that's positive. So, but I also believe that we're going to see at least another point through next year. As we know, that doesn't always translate into interest rates, you know, directly. So, but what that means is the first 6 months, the Fed's going to keep, and Powell has said it. He has said it. He said, listen, we are going to continue to try to drive down this inflation through increasing interest rates. That's one of the tools that they have. So I believe that you're going to see, you know, 0.5 point to 0.25 point increases, you know, through probably early summer. That would, and everyone I've talked to kind of believes the same thing. You know, if you're in the mortgage business like Mo, you know, you have to be a little more optimistic. If you're in the real estate business trying to sell, then you probably have to be a little optimistic as you're trying to get clients. I get that. But, and you know, I'm not, you might be right. But when you take a look at inflation, it's got a ways to go.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that's kind of the first thing that you guys need to be watching is, you know, the Fed's rate decision, because that is the first factor of three factors we're going to go over today. It's going to make a big difference on the housing market.
Well, it already has. Mm-hmm. What we had in March, was it March? I think we were at 9.1%. I might be wrong. I'm going off of memory. Sorry, guys. And I was sick last week. So 9.1% inflation. I think the last one we saw was 7.1. So it's only down 2% after 7 rate increases.
Right. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
I am going to do a video on lag. And, you know, to try to talk about that. But typically, you know, there's usually a 6 to 9 month lag between federal funds rates increases and, you know, the time it hits the market, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So you definitely need to be keeping, paying attention to those, rate drops, you know, whether it's going to drop or go up. You think it's going to go up, people think it's going to drop. So that's obviously going to make a difference. But sometimes it's not just that, because if the Fed drops the rate and we have less buyers, then it might not make a difference either. And that's kind of what we saw back in 08 when the Fed dropped the rate and there was no one to actually purchase.
Well, you have to take a look at, you know, one of the asset bubbles was real estate. Period.
In 08 or now?
Well, now. Okay. I mean, in 2022, right? 2021, 2022. So, you know, the low rates created the bubble. All that's happening is that, you know, there's a hole in the bubble, right? So it's shrinking. Home prices are going down. Yes, there's, you know, what you're going to find is people are going to say, but we're still undersupplied and we're still this and we're still that. That's all true. But what's happened is that you can't double the rate and expect people to be buying at the same frenzy. Like take a look at that one property you were looking at. What was it? But $699, and then Now it came down $100,000.
Yeah, now they pulled it off the market, which we'll talk about later. But yeah.
So you know, and there was what, 2 price reductions
within 6 weeks.
Yeah. So that's happening all over the place. If you guys look, there's it's happening in multifamily. So, you know, something that was priced aggressively, let's say, you know, in October or August of last year, wasn't getting offers because the cost of mortgage payment was so much higher and cash flow was less. So, you know, so you offer less and then they take on off the market.
Yeah. And that kind of brings us to point number two, you know, so point number one was, you know, the rates. But point number two is the inventory that we're seeing is going up.
Duh.
Housing inventory.
Yeah, of course.
Well, it's going up a lot, like, you know, and the listings are down. So what new listings? So what that means is that houses are sitting. So we're not having more things list and then more things sell. We're just having more things list and more things sit.
Correct. Right. And that's normal. I think, you know, obviously if there's less sales, the thing to watch and I think that what people need to pay attention to are, you know, the ripple effects or the processional effects of what happens when there's no sales. We all know that there was very little sales compared to, you know, the 6 months prior. So let's just say first 6 months of 2022, last 6 months of 2022 are very different. So the real estate commissions are down, the title company fees are down, the insurance, you know, everything, the contractors, the flippers, the hard money, everything that goes into that transaction slowed down. So those are all going to start to show up, in my opinion, next, you know, in this first quarter and through this, you know, through this next 6 months. So I think that's when you're going to start to, the Fed's going to have to declare a recession, in my opinion, as unemployment starts to creep up as a result of not just real estate. We're seeing it in tech too, you know, Amazon, Zillow, Realtor.com, there's a number, Meta. You know, I guess. No.
Well, that's our third point is the economy. So Ken's a little bit all over right now. But let's talk about inventory first, though,
Keep me on track.
So the inventory, the housing inventory is starting to get more stagnant. And we saw that in 2008, right? So as the housing inventory builds, prices naturally are going to go down because there's more supply. And that can be a catalyst because people can be sitting on their home right now. And then that, oh my gosh, I need to list it now because prices are dropping kind of. Panic sets in, which creates more inventory, which creates lower prices. And that's exactly what we had happen in 08. It was like a domino effect where people just started listing things all the time. And the inventory went way up because they were panicking that their prices were going down.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things going on. So it depends on the motivation of the seller. So if the seller has moved to a different state, has a lot of equity, they're probably going to price it to sell. Right. But if the seller has, you know, like in the case that you were talking about earlier, they might be in a situation where they're bumping up on what they paid.
Right.
So now they're digging into their original equity. So a lot of it's going to depend on how long the people have had the home and how much equity they have in the home and whether or not they need to move or not. So if you have a 2 or 3% or even a 4% rate on that home fixed, that's gold. You're not, I mean, there's a, you know, you have to really stretch in order to get that same home. If you're at 4 and the market's at 6 on the interest rate, if you move laterally, your payment's gone way up. So you can't move laterally. So you have to move up. So, you know, to get the same quality of home. So a lot of people aren't going to do that. So it's going to keep a lot of people in the homes that they're, if depending on their motivation, you know,
right.
It's going to keep them in their home.
Right. Cause why would they want to get the same payment for a smaller home? You know, normally you see a lot of boomers and stuff downsizing, but if the downsizing costs the same amount as the house you're in now, then there doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are just freaking out about their loss of equity.
Yeah.
You know, they look at that like a stock, you know, it's not liquid. It's, but as the home prices go down in an area and you start to see more inventory, and the potential of rates going up, I think it's going to get a little more dicey.
Well, you know, I had an interesting conversation with our realtor, Elisa, this morning. So as you brought up, you know, I was looking at a home. It was listed at $699. Within 6 weeks, it was down to $599. And then the it was just pulled off the market on Friday. And so she had called the realtor, you know, what's going on? And, you know, the guy doesn't want to take less than $599. He bought it for like $300 back in the day. So he's going to have his daughter rent it from him until prices go back up. You know what I mean? Like he's like, and what Elisa told me is a lot of sellers are doing that because they are in this such low rate. They're going to rent their home. But the problem I think is going to be is they perhaps think this is a short term 6 month issue, you know, maybe a year, where it could be much longer than that. And also not everyone, you know, is designed to be a landlord and not everyone's designed to have two mortgages because a lot of these people in this position have already bought another house, right? Or they're a flipper or whatever, right? So now they have a tenant and now they have issues and now things break and now, you know, so what I told her was to tell him, if you ever get tired of leasing your daughter, we have a cash offer for you that less than you want to take. But I have a feeling this whole running to your daughter thing in the midterm is going to get pretty, pretty tiring. And also, you know, if rates keep going up and prices start to go down, the buyer could see the writing on the wall because I don't think he thinks that this is a multi-year issue he needs to solve.
Yeah. Yeah. It's possible. Yeah. I think, you know, renting to your daughter, I guess, is a solution, you know. But you know, it is a solution for him. I mean, if there's no real pressure, and he bought it for $300, he's probably got a low number on it from an interest rate. Mm-hmm. It probably cash flows a little bit,
or maybe he's watching the Ken McElroy show, and we encourage people to rent your place instead of selling it. Yeah.
Actually, if your daughter's watching, then I would suggest that she do, you know, she does a wraparound with the seller.
Yeah.
With her dad. Like, you know, go take the deal down from your dad. Do a lease option.
Right.
But anyway, I think that, you know, people are going to get scrappy, you know, in the next year to try to keep, you know, to your point. I mean, that is their last hope. I hope this is short term, you know, and it might be. You know, nobody can predict that.
We don't know that it won't be. But I'm just saying that Elisa, our realtor, is seeing a lot of people that are renting in their places instead of selling them. And if it's not short term, those things may come to the market when people decide they don't want to be a landlord, you know, because some people aren't cut out for it.
Yeah, I think we're going to start to see these Airbnbs, you know, hit the market here in the next, you know, few months. The people that bought a high-end or really nice properties and furnished them, and they're having a tough time getting the Airbnb rent. So, you know, there's a little bit of disruption there, and I think that a lot of times they don't make sense as a regular rental. So I think that's something probably to watch, you know, not necessarily just in the high-end market.
Right. Yeah, because the people we're talking about now are people that are selling their home but bought their home a while ago.
Yeah.
The people that bought at the top are going to struggle more, you know, especially the ones that didn't get the super low interest rates on trying to rent it, their home and break even, or Airbnb it, or whatever their plan is.
If somebody bought the last year to year and a half with an adjustable.
Yeah, and Kelly said, you know, we're already seeing Airbnbs be converted in Utah for sale or for long term. And the thing is with Airbnbs, the ones that were, you know, Airbnbs a long time, typically they bought them for a good price and they can convert them to long term. The people that were buying Airbnbs in the last couple of years, typically those don't convert to long term. Those, they need to make, you know, $7,000-$8,000 a month on a basic three bedroom house,
just,
you know, that might
even
rent, right, that might rent for $3,500 a month,
yeah.
You know? So those are the people that are going to be in trouble because they have to Airbnb, and Airbnb is way down and the inventory on Airbnb is way up.
The other thing that was interesting, hopefully you guys know this, if you take a look at personal savings rates, just Google it. I think the St. Louis Fed has a website that shows your personal savings. You'll see that people's savings rates are way, way down. On the same site, you'll see that people's credit card debt is way, way up. So basically what that means is that people, a lot of people have run through their savings and they're they're starting to use debt to maintain their lifestyle. So you have that also entering into this first quarter. And I think, you know, that's going to affect if you're a homeowner or a renter, you know, whatever it might be. I think that's probably the next thing. I was talking to somebody yesterday about car repos are way up. I didn't even think about this one, but we're starting to see repo, you know, the repo man. And we're also starting to see, I thought this was an interesting, this friend of mine, Eric, said one of the things that he watches are pawn shops. I'm like, well, that makes a lot of sense. You know, when people start to get tight, you know, the pawn shops do really, 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 really well, right? And when things are good, then, you know, their inventory is scarce. I'm like, oh, that's a good one to watch. So there's all these things happening, and I believe that are happening, you know, that you guys can go online and look, and you'll see that, you know, as we headed to this next period of time, I really believe, you know, there was an article today that you sent me on layoffs for in the Wall Street Journal. And I just think there's a light shining on this issue.
So let's get in. So that's point number three, which is the economy. Yeah. So that's the last thing. It's like the icing on the cake here that could make everything really go down. So, you know, you have a lot of inventory, you have higher rates, it kind of, you know, the rates might go down and, you know, inventory, you know, might stabilize. But if you have an issue with the economy and jobs, that's the icing on the cake that can just make this whole thing explode. And that's when you can see the big drops in housing prices, like 10-20%, is if we have way less buyers because of the economy.
Yeah. The other thing that I'm seeing, in fact, there's a bunch of firms that go out and track rent growth or note, you know, just rent, like year, month over month. CoStar, Yardie, you know, Rent Real Page, Axios, all those are services. And they're projecting next year, in some cases, negative rent growth. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? What that means is that in some markets, we're going to see rents actually go negative.
Go down.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's, you know, and the other markets, they're either soft or flat or no growth. And in some markets, they're projecting, you know, higher. But the point is obviously, you know, there's hundreds of markets and they all operate independently based on what's going on in those particular markets. But I think it's interesting to know or note that we're bumping up against some affordability issues. And you know, so we're seeing on the rent side, so you can imagine what's happening on the mortgage side, right? So you can't have 6% rates, let's say, with these higher numbers, even though they're coming down. People can't afford the monthly mortgage. And, you know, so I don't see that changing as the Fed start to address inflation again for the next 4 or 5 months.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're going to definitely run into that. And especially with job losses and just income growth is not keeping up with inflation. We still have an inflation issue. So those things are really could impact the real estate market. So we'll keep you all posted. It's going to be interesting.
And one last thing I just want to point out. We were talking about this, you and I. These higher interest rates are starting to affect employers. The higher costs, the higher labor costs, the higher costs for everything, like everything's going up, you know, and so the employers, you know, are looking at their sales and, you know, if their revenue is not going up, they're starting to look at ways, you know, to just maintain what they've done in the past. So, you know, and so I think that's starting to show up a little bit more as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're seeing a lot more layoffs. You know, that article that I sent you from the Wall Street Journal was kind of addressing how a lot of HR is debating, do we do all of the layoffs now or do we trickle them in over the next few months? These are conversations, you know, that I'd say most companies are having right now is their budgets for 2023. And, you know, if sales projections are off, that means, salary projections are off. So,
yeah, Yeah. Yeah. This, so that's why, you know, what kind of a business you're in into this next 2023 is important. You know, being in the multifamily business, being in the, you know, as a landlord is going to be a very good business for us. You know, we are going to be, we're well positioned in great shape going into 2023. These high interest rates on single family helps rentals, yeah. Period. It just helps. It drives people, it pushes people into rentals. It's not necessarily good because you do need a balanced housing policy. You actually do need people buying homes, you know. So right now it's leaning more toward the rental market because of the unaffordability or affordability, I should say, on the single family. So the you know, I expect that to continue through this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Eli made a good point. You know, he said that wages going up is going to keep inflation up. And I thought that was a very good point because usually when wages go up, they don't come back down. And that has to be paid for in product and, you know, in sales. So to his point, you know, keeping the wages suppressed is actually what they need to do in order to have, you know, control inflation.
Yeah.
So also make sure you hit the like button. We love that. Really helps us out. We're at 79 likes. Let's see if we can get to 125 likes. And also check out Ken McElroy official Instagram because Ken is going to be placing his bets on who's going to be winning the playoff games for football this weekend. So if you can beat Ken, and he's no football expert, so we'll see, then you will be in a drawing to win a free sweatshirt for Be Infinite and also our grand prize, which is going to be our premium membership for a year. So go ahead to Ken McElroy official on Instagram. It's right at the top there. You can't miss it in the link and sign up.
You know, I'm going to text Seth.
Oh, our football.
All my questions.
Seth Joyner.
Yep. I'm just going to say, hey, dude, what do I do here? You guys are in trouble. I've got an insider in the NFL.
He's definitely picking the Eagles. So there's no doubt there. So, all right, let's jump into our premium questions. This comes from Ken's Inner Circle group. And also those of you on YouTube, make sure to ask questions. I'll try to get to a couple of those as well. So I wanted to start with this one because it kind of ties into what we're talking about. Chad from the Inner Circle wants to know, I have 95% of the same tenants I had 4 years ago. Once rents rose, those same tenants in the last year, I've been noticing short pays, no pays, and issues meeting the new rent price. I've even had to evict someone. Is this the natural cycle when rents go up and people who qualify at a lower rate are living there?
Wow. That's a great question, by the way. Very insightful. There's a lot of discussion on this one. So a couple things. I told Danielle, you know, she has a renter renewing, right? And what did you do?
Did not raise the rent.
Right. I said, you know, this is a year, in my opinion, that you want to not try to push rent. This is a year that you want to maintain it, cash flow. You want high occupancy, high cash flow. Now, this is not a year to mess around, in my opinion. You don't want to try to get that extra $50 or $100. And, you know, it's a win-win. The renter will be happy and you will be happy because you don't have to turn the unit. You don't have to market the unit. You don't have to clean the unit. You don't have to do any maintenance. You have to change out appliances or flooring or anything like that and or find another renter. So I think that's number one. If I were you guys, I would be looking for, it's not, the offense in this case is stability. So that's number one. So the number two, you know, the thing about rent is it's not really a landlord or a renter. It's the market. So, you know, if your rent is going up really aggressively in a market and everyone in the whole market is priced the same, you're probably going to be fine. But if you're pushing rents above market, then you're going to have these kinds of issues. Now on the payment side, you have to dig a little deeper and you have to take a look at what's actually happening with your tenant specifically. So maybe your tenant works for a home builder and the home builder is not building any homes. Or maybe your tenant is a realtor and they haven't been able to sell any homes because of the price of money went up, interest rate. And so they have less buyers. Or maybe they're at a title company and they just had a bunch of layoffs. So you have to really dig deep into that. And that'll kind of tell you. So it's kind of what we were talking about before about recession-proof businesses. So if your tenants are working in businesses that are struggling from the recession and their income is also maybe tied to that in some way, then they're going to have problems paying the rent. You know, in my opinion, if they've been paying well for, I guess it's been a number of years, you know, I would work with them and really find out what's happening with them.
Yeah, I think communication is key here. You know, like I've had tenants lose their job and I've gotten them out of their lease because as a small landlord, you know, if somebody loses their job, I just want to get somebody in there that can pay. Yeah. So basically, you know, I've told my tenants that before, listen, I'll let you out of this lease because you're having trouble paying with a 60-day notice. And I'm going to try to get somebody in there before 60 days. And so you can get out of your lease. And you can, I think that my tenant ended up moving back to her parents' house. But that conversation's important because maybe they're really stressed about being in this lease and you're really stressed about them paying you. And they don't want all the fines and penalties that come from breaking a lease. But if you give them that option, then they might take it, right? Because you want to get tenants in there that can afford it. And I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, you don't want tenants that are stressed out because maybe they would benefit from moving somewhere cheaper. Maybe they would benefit from, you know, moving in with somebody else and having a roommate situation. You know, they might embrace that opportunity if you give it to them.
You know, not everyone will be truthful with you, but most will, in my opinion. So I think you're stressed about one thing and they're stressed about the same thing. So, you know, there's nothing better than like what Danielle did where, you know, she solved it. She, you know, they said, yes, this is the issue we're facing. You know, I think in that particular case, they lost their job. So she worked with them and then she was able to say, listen, if you can help us show the unit while you're there, keep it clean, then, you know, we'll work on something. So, you know, we don't tie you to the whole term of the lease as opposed to them just leaving and then you going after them legally and all that kind of stuff. You know, you shouldn't have to evict people, in my opinion. If you've got a good line of communication, you can avoid all that.
Yeah, especially if you're, you know, really being good about the credit checks, right? So you know that they have good credit. Nobody wants to mess up their credit that has good credit. And, you know, they sound like they've been with you a long time. So they want to do the right thing because they've always paid you. So it's just a matter of, you know, figuring out what the issue is and, you know, figuring out how to solve it. I know at MC companies, you know, you've done things before where you do weekly payment plans with people because sometimes people are bad at budgeting their money when they get tight. And by the end of the month, it's gone. So if you can say, instead of paying a monthly rent, we just do it weekly out of each of your paychecks, then that's easier for them and that helps them budget. So there's different options you can do, but communication is going to be the best thing because if you're not communicating and you're just letting them be stressed out, I mean, put it this way, if somebody's not paying you rent, they're more stressed out than you are.
Yeah.
Because they're really trying, most likely, as long as they're a good person, good credit, all that.
Well,
so they're stressed out too.
They have issues all over the place. Rent is just one of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are real people. Like you gotta let you, you know, it's not a transaction or a business issue. I mean, essentially I understand there's a lease and all that stuff, but you just got to sit down with them and try to work something out. That's been my experience. It's the best way to do it.
Yep.
And people don't want to move and you know, there is a way to work through this stuff. And, you know, if you've done a good job communicating with your residents and you have a good line, like Danielle, they have her phone number. They text her. She's communicating with them. She knows them all. She's responsive. It's going to be a lot easier for you.
Yeah. And do your best that, you know, realistically, if they cannot pay the rent on a lease, you need to let them out. If they don't have the money, what are you trying for?
Yeah.
And that's fair, too. You know, like if they've lost their job, like the girl, my tenant, she lost her job. She literally was working part-time at Target for 15. She went from making like 80 grand a year to $15 an hour at Target. She couldn't find a job anywhere. like, she doesn't have the money to pay me, you know? And so, you know, you just, you have to, you know, let them out of the lease and get somebody in there. And now I have a couple in there that makes good money. She moved back home with her parents. She's regrouping. It's a win-win situation.
Yeah, and she was very happy that you,
very happy.
You met with her and said, let's figure this out together.
Yeah, we got a new tenant in there in 4 weeks. So she only had to pay 1 month of rent and additionally. And, she, you know, she was supposed to pay like 8 more months of rent because she hadn't lived there very long.
Right.
But it just was unfortunate timing.
You can fall behind the lease, take a hard stance. But in this particular case, you know, you got to have a little empathy, a little compassion about what's happening if they're communicating to you and if you have a good open relationship with them.
So this next question comes from Nick. This one's kind of interesting. I know you're going to have a lot of input here. He said, I have a duplex rented. I rent both units. I put in the leases that the tenants are responsible for cutting the grass and shoveling the snow, even though I plan to cut the grass and shovel the snow myself. And I told them verbally that I would cut the grass and shovel the snow. Well, one of my tenants told me, don't worry about it, I'll do it. I'm afraid to trust the tenants that they're going to maintain the grass and maintain shoveling the snow and ice and someone's going to fall. What should I do? So there's so many things in this here.
We just were dealing with this, Matt. Remember you, Danielle?
We did. We were just dealing with this now. Yep.
So it's a great, great topic. So first of all, you as a landlord have to decide. Period. It's your decision.
But it's weird to put it in the lease that it's their responsibility, but then you're going to do it because now you're confusing to the tenant because what else is in the lease that you really don't care about? Like, do you care about the late fee? Do you care? You know, like there's all these things.
So in our particular case, you know, the landlord or the tenant said, I'll be responsible for the yard. Well, it's like brown.
No, it's like
and
straw.
Overgrown. and he's like, oh, like it's dead. And I'm like, well, why is it dead? Well, I cut back on the water because the water expense was high. Well, I'm like, of course you did. So that's why it's dead. So, you know, so again, you know, you have to decide what are you going to include in the rent and what are you not? And then you can't say this is your responsibility. You know, this has to do with pest control. This has to do with landscaping. This has to do with, you know, the garbage, you know, the trash and, you know, anything like that. It has to do with anything and everything that could potentially be a problem for the actual property. We've had situations where we said, okay, the tenant's responsible for pest control. Well, if you got a 4 or 8 unit building, let's say, and one unit has pest, they're going, you know, roaches go everywhere, right? You know what I'm saying? So you have to think this through, you know, which affects the other tenants. So does landscaping and so does snow. So, you know, in my situation, we like to control all of those things and let the tenant not be responsible for it. It's the same reason why you tell the tenant not to paint the unit. We've had that problem. Where they actually paint the unit, whatever color they find, whatever's on sale, wherever it is, and you go in there, it looks like not good. So, you know, you cannot give the tenant too much responsibility.
Yeah, you know, I think I give my tenants the responsibility of the yard. It's went okay, but as you said, now we have a slight issue. But but I wouldn't give them in charge of anything that could cause a safety issue, right? So shoveling, the snow, the ice, like if somebody falls, you're going to be dealing with a lot more than a tenant. You know, that could be a real big problem for you. So I would always never put the tenant in charge of anything that could create a danger or a hazard. So but the bigger thing is you can't put things in the lease that you're not going to honor and that aren't correct, you know, and that's kind of what Maple said on here. He said, don't put in a contract something that you're going to contradict verbally.
Yeah.
Because it's very confusing to the tenant because then they don't really look at the lease as, you know, a binding. They don't look at it like it's everything in there could perhaps be negotiated because you're not following it.
Like rent payments.
Like rent payments or late payments or different things. You have to follow the lease. So step one would be next time you do the lease, make sure you lay it out correctly. And then whatever you decide is what you decide, but you just have to stick to what you decide.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm telling you, these are all liability issues, specifically on the landscaping though. That's a, you know, if they move, and you got about like, you've got, you know, landscaping doesn't look good, it's going to affect the rent that you can get for the next person. Plus you want that thing to look great all the time.
You do.
You don't want the neighbors after you. You don't want the HOA coming in or anything like that. If you're in an HOA, by the way, let's say, which has its own complications, as we know, you know, typically you don't have to worry about the landscaping. That is one of the beautiful things. That's why an HOA exists. They maintain the roofs. They maintain, you know, the paint on the exterior. They maintain the driveways. They maintain the snow, the ice, the landscaping, all that kind of stuff. So that is the purpose of the HOA. So, you know, that is the other side of the HOA.
But it depends on the HOA, because our HOA doesn't include the roof or the landscaping or anything. Probably wouldn't do snow removal if we had it here.
It does depend on the HOA, yeah. On the one project you have, Bella Vita does.
Yeah, the condos. Yeah, condos are usually very good about all that.
It does all that. But on another one where they're all single family houses inside of an HOA that just handles the exterior landscape, but the exterior landscape, driveways, and all that kind of stuff look good.
They do.
Yeah, and that's maintained by the HOA.
Yep. So next question actually is from YouTube here. This is a great question. So Gito wants to know, he said, they said we bumped our rent last year. Our tenants are having some trouble paying it now. Are we able to lower it back down to what it was, and would you recommend doing so?
You can do whatever you like, truly. You really can. It's just the lease is between you and the renter. You know, there's, you know, I would find out the bigger issue. I don't know how much you raised it, but if I'm guessing it's probably not a ton, which is generally, let's say it's 5, 6, 7, 8% maybe. So that little bit of money is really probably not the bigger issue. So you probably, in other words, if you go back to the old rent, you know, the real issue is, are they gonna be able to pay that? So, you know, I think you got to find out what's going on with the tenant themselves. And if you're cash flowing like crazy, then you as a landlord can simply decide right then, sit down with the tenant, find out what they could commit to, work something out with them. You can do whatever you want. You can rip up one lease and have a new one on the spot. It's totally your call.
But you're also setting a precedence, remember, to do that. Because if you raise the rent fairly and you're in market based on your rents around you, then you could just find a tenant that can pay.
That's true.
Because when you start, you know, I've never had to do this, but I would think if you would start to lower the rent and accommodate them, you don't know that the situation is going to get better.
That's what.
So now you're getting less rent and you're also setting this precedent so the tenant has this control.
Right.
And you're going to kind of bow down and just lower the rent back down.
That's why I said you got to make sure that, you know, it's a bigger issue than just lowering the rent. So, you know, you're right. You can definitely hold the line and get a new tenant. That's obvious. So if you can, right? And there's costs associated with that. So, you know, just, but the truth is as a landlord, you can do whatever you want. Now, if you have a tenant, if you're in a duplex or a fourplex, it can become even more complex because obviously if you're lowering one tenant, and they're having a beer together, you know, a week later, then there's a ripple effect. So be careful of that.
So our next question is an interesting question. We always love the interesting question. So it's from Eric. It says, hey guys, I was thinking about making an offer on a condo, but a lady down the hall runs a business out of her unit that I don't like. Her business is an agency where she provides strippers for bachelor parties. Would this deter you from making an offer?
Oh my God. I have so many things I have to hold back on this one. Well, first of all,
how'd you find out? Were you at a bachelor party?
It's so good. I can assure you that a business like that is going to disrupt a tenant that you move in, you know?
Well, it depends. Like, are they having the strippers in the condo unit, or is she just sending out strippers all over?
Apparently he knows. So I don't really know the situation, but I'm just saying whenever, you know, and the other thing is I think that there are some restrictions inside of leases on being able to run businesses, you know, so I don't know, the HOA probably needs to get involved at something like that. You know, it's an interesting one, but you got to take a look at the tenant itself, period. You know, if you buy something and you stick a tenant in there, you know, are they going to feel disrupted? That's the bigger issue.
Well, Skylar wants to know if they're hot strippers, because that might make a difference.
My head doesn't go anywhere but hot strippers. I don't even think about that.
No, I do, though. It would, for me, it would depend. If this person is just running a business out of there where the strippers aren't actually coming to the condo, I probably wouldn't care. Because I don't think it would be very disrupting. But if there's parties, bachelor parties going on at a condo every weekend, then yes, that's going to be disruptive. So I would want more information.
Yeah, I guess the, again, back to the tenant thing. If she's super quiet and there's nobody coming in and out, then again, it's not going to disrupt your tenant.
Right.
Period. So, you know, and then who cares, right?
Yeah, there's businesses that go all over the condo complexes when you have 100 and some people living together.
Right.
Because it could just be gossip around the hall, right? He was down the hall and somebody mentioned to him, you know, the business, right? So it's just more how loud and disruptive that would be.
Yeah. That's an awesome question. What?
I know. Yep, exactly. Well, John, the realtor, said you think she'd had to be on her A game or she'd be getting too much attention and kicked out. Oh, man. All these funny comments from those of you listening.
Well, say a couple of them. Come on.
Skylar also wants to know if they have a business card, asking for a friend. And Ricardo wants more information as well. But I don't know if he means on the question or on the stripper agency.
Strippers have pictures on their cards? You know, like realtors.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, if they have cards, you know. They do in Vegas.
There
you go. All right. Next question here, guys, is from Andreas. Said, I have a 20 years experience in construction and would like to buy some properties. Do you recommend single family or duplexes, or learn how to manage instead?
Wow. Those are very different questions. So, first of all, I would definitely do a duplex if you can, because you could potentially build one, move into one side and have a renter pay for the whole thing. So that's a great way. It's called house hacking to have a tenant pay, you know, you live, it's not necessarily income, you know, you're not really cash flow, but what you've done is you've reduced your living costs. You know, if you can, I would definitely do duplexes. The management side at a one or two is not that complicated. There's a lot of resources out there. The big key is finding the right tenant, of course. And then you can learn from there pretty easily. And there's lots and lots and lots of resources, including on kenmacro.com, for you to draw down on information for the management side. But I don't see the, if you can build, you know, don't go into the management side of the business. You know, you'll learn that through experience.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us today. We'll see you next week. Make sure you check out Ken's Inner Circle, where you can ask us questions that we will answer every single week.
Yeah. Nice job, guys. Look at this. Pages and pages and pages of great questions. So keep them coming. It's been great. We do go through all these. We'll be actually posting some of these too, through blogs and different things. So thank you.
Absolutely. And make sure to go to Ken McElroy official Instagram page. Click on the link at the top. Submit your votes for the football, competition against Ken. And we'll see who does better. I'm very interested to see how you do, by the way.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Strategies Podcast. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes and let us know what you thought of today's episode. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.